My name is Vincent Fresina. I'm 38 years old. Today is December 26, 2017, and I'm speaking with Sandy and Greg Smith, who are my parents. We're recording this interview in Clarksville, Tennessee. In the background, you may hear us joined by Cricket and Tanner, who are the family dogs. They may be drinking or chewing, so if you hear weird noises in the background, that's what that is. Dad, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
A little bit about our childhood. Well, probably it'd be better if I talk a little bit about our economic status, because we were pretty much poor. We grew up on what we'd call the wrong side of the track. Quite literally, we were on the wrong side of the track. We were kind of split between two separate counties, Weakley County and Carroll County in West Tennessee. My mom was a nurse, and she typically worked nights so that she could take care of us during the day. And my dad was a mechanic, and he worked pretty steady up until about the point where he got to be about 40 years old. Then he kind of job hopped. So mom really was the breadwinner of the family. Never knew we were poor. I don't think we really realized that until much later on, probably by the time we got to be freshmen or juniors in high school. That's the point where we kind of realized that we were a little different from everybody else. So had a great childhood, had a brother and had two sisters. The typical things that we would do when we were kids, go to the farm and visit the grandparents. I used to spend like a week at a time with each one of them during the summer. Probably my favorite memory would be I actually rode a bicycle from McKenzie, Tennessee, all the way to Dresden, Tennessee, out on the farm. And that was a big adventure for somebody that was, at the time, was probably about 12 years old. So that was fantastic. So that's a little bit about me. What about you?
Well, hold on one second. What city or what town did you grow up in? What was the name of the town?
Right. We grew up in McKenzie, Tennessee.
Excellent. And mom, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood, what you were like as a child?
Well, my childhood was like Dad's. It was, we were very poor. My biological father was an alcoholic. His name was Russell Ambrose Weir. My mom was Audrey Marquis Sharp. And I have an older brother named Russell Alfred Weir. Myself, Sandra June Weir, and we three, because my mother divorced my father when I was two, so my mother, my oldest brother, and myself lived in a small duplex, and my mother had to work. She worked at the auto club, which was basically a emergency road service for vehicles, and she worked swing shifts. And so we had to have babysitters when we got home from school. And we, at the time, didn't understand that why we needed a babysitter. We thought if we were bad enough that we wouldn't need a babysitter and mom would have to stay home. We didn't understand that she had to work so we would eat, have a place with a roof over our head. And we didn't go to the dentist very much, only if we had a toothache, and there was a lot of home medicating because we couldn't go to the doctor. A lot of our clothes were, we were bought a couple of outfits here and there to go to school, to start school, and the rest of it was stuff we'd worn the year before. And, you know, getting saddle shoes for me, and I have no idea what my brother got, but we had to make sure they were extra heavy duty so that we wouldn't destroy them in the first week. And my grandmother, my mom's mom, would babysit us when my mom either didn't have a babysitter because we ran them off, or she was working late or weekends or something. And my mother had a sister. Her name is Connie. She had two daughters, Randy and Dale Ann. And sometimes we had to go stay with them, and while my mom worked. So even though we were broke, we were very happy because we had each other, and we were entertained by basically going and doing nothing. We would watch people go play miniature golf. We would sit in the bowling alley, and as much as we wanted to play, we couldn't. We could have a 5-cent drink and watch everybody bowl. That was satisfactory to us because we didn't know any better. We knew we could afford to watch everyone and not afford to do. And so that was okay with us. Christmases were slim. Birthdays were probably as slim. We got one gift. And then when I was about 7, my mom married a man named Howard Dice. And we got a legal alias, and she changed our last name to Dice. And they had a son and named him Kenneth Clint Dice. So he's 8 years younger than myself. And we ended up moving from that duplex to a house. And life got better because we had another income. And we had kind of a regular old family then, you know. Did the fun things about, you know, water fights and vacations. And then there, you know, for the bad times where we had our spankings, but we sure deserved it, I'm sure. You know, birthdays and Christmases got a little bit better, and, you know, stay out late till the street lights were on, and come in when mom screamed for us, and so, yeah, it was and me as a child. Actually, I was very, very shy, very, very shy as a little child. I would stand at my mom's knees and twist her dress until she was pretty knock-kneed and didn't want anybody talking to me, or because I was so shy, I would just hide behind her. And it was hard for me to walk into a room with people there because they'd look at me, and it was scary. But as I got older, I broke out of my shell. So, blonde hair, toad blonde, blue eyes, your average American California kid.
I missed it if you said it. Did you say the name of your town you grew up in?
I'm sorry. It actually was a suburb of Long Beach, and it's called Dominguez.
Dominguez. Do you still think you're shy now?
At times. At times. At other times, I don't care. So I just act crazy. But I would say probably 75% of the time around strange people, I'm shy.
Are you shy, Dad?
I'm introverted. I guess that's one of the things that attracted me to your mom, because she's an extrovert, regardless of what she says. And she has that gift of gab. She can talk to anybody.
As you can tell.
And I really couldn't do that. And so she's really helped me a lot in that perspective, to be able to talk to strangers and that kind of thing. There was a time when I really, I would get knock-kneed if I had to, like, give a briefing or anything like that, get more than 2 or 3 people in a room, and it would really bother me. It doesn't bother me now, but I owe a lot of that to your mom.
And what are your siblings' names and your parents' and your grandparents' names?
Donna Cooley was my grandmother on Dad's side. John, let's see, who else? Let's see, I'm trying to think of who. Lester.
Yeah.
Lester Smith was my grandfather on my father's side. And on my mother's side, it was Bertha Hudgens and, gosh, I'm trying to think. Drawing a blank at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, those were our grandparents, and they were, I guess Dad had it a little bit better than Dad's side of the family had it a little bit better than Mom's side of the family, because Dad's side always owned a farm, and so they always had fresh beef and cows and grew their own gardens and stuff like that. And mom's side of the family, they were much poorer because they kind of lived, you know, selling scrap iron and scraping by and doing odd work, like if they were tearing down a building. I went with my grandfather one time, and the job was chipping mortar off of solid brick. So you'd chip the mortar off, and then he would sell the brick, but he was paid to remove the brick. So just any kind of odd jobs and stuff like that he could get. They did run a couple of different gas stations, just small, family-owned. I believe the biggest I ever got was a little Conoco station, and really it was just kind of the name. It's just a very small mm-hmm. place. My granddad pretty much made most of his money not with gasoline, but changing tires. Mm-hmm. So tire repair and stuff like that.
And what are your siblings' names?
Glenn, Glenda, and Jeanette.
Okay.
And mom had Mona, who would have been the first child, but she had some type of megaloencephalitis, and she died within days.
Okay.
So there would have been five, but the four of us pretty much grew up.
Got it. And then where were you born?
I was actually born in San Antonio, Texas, at Wolford Hall Medical Center. Dad was in the Air Force at the time. So.
Where were you born?
I was born at St. Mary's Hospital in Long Beach, California.
Cool. So you told me a little bit about your grandparents already, Dad. What did you really like about spending time with them in the summer, or not like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess what I really liked is I felt like I was getting out of work, because if I was at home, I would pretty much have to go with Dad. At the time, he worked at a place called Rustwood Shores, and he was like a groundskeeper more than anything else. So cutting brush and cutting trees and finding lot line stakes and that kind of thing for at the time was a pretty good sized subdivision on the Kentucky Lake. And so whenever I went to either my grandmother's side of the house or my grandfather's side of the house, they both lived within probably 10 miles of each other, but they were so different. One of them still had an active farm and still milked cows and that kind of thing. And so I always loved that, because they would have ponies that we could ride and blackberries that we could pick. And probably one of my favorite memories of staying with, we called her Silky, which was Dad's mom from Lester, who was my grandfather. She would always let us go pick blackberries. And as many blackberries as we would pick, she would make blackberry pies. And I always remember them, that they were always shimmering with butter, because they were just so loaded with sugar and butter. But she would sure make them. They were delicious. So the other farm, pretty much they had already gotten older, Grandma Cooley had. And so they really didn't have a working farm at that point. They were kind of retired. So they just had a lot of property.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them still had a well house. Both of them still had outhouses. Grandma Cooley actually had a cistern that ran off the side of the house. They had a root cellar, that kind of thing. So it was a great time in life. I mean, as a kid, when you kind of look back at it, these are folks that still had meager means, but they would always there was always plenty of fresh meat, because they'd put it away over through the fall, and we'd always go fishing in the summer.
Nice. Mom, what do you remember about your grandparents?
Well, actually, my biological father, I never knew him or his family. As far as my mom's parents, her father died 5 years before I was born. No, 2 years before I was born. And so that left my mother's mother, Mabel Sharp. Actually, her maiden name is Still. And she was a constant in my life. She would be there on weekends and Christmases and birthdays and that type of thing. Just your average grandmother.
Okay. What about great-grandparents? Do you guys remember any great-grandparents in the family, or have any idea who they might have been?
Only on Grandmother Hudgens' side of the house. She was about half Indian, and about all I remember were her high cheekbones, and some of the meals that she used to cook, because they were pretty much made with corn or matzah and that kind of thing. But other than that, I really don't remember a lot about her, other than she was in poor health. Probably, I don't remember more than just a couple of years before she died. That would have been Bertha Capps' mother.
Great-grandparents?
Well, that would have been my mother's grandparents, Clark Still and June Still, which that's where I get my middle name. Clark Still was an architect, and he's a very interesting man because in Ventura County, there were many, many items that he carved. For example, there's a huge cross, and I hope it hasn't burned. This is the year of the worst fire in Los Angeles County. And I'm hoping and praying that the architecture pieces that he carved and produced are still standing. But there's a very famous cross in Ventura that he did. There's also many buildings that he was the architect for. He also, when he came from Missouri on his own, because they decided they wanted to move from Missouri to Ventura, he found a garage. Now, this is during World War II, well, before the war broke out. And all he could find was a garage. So he decided that he was going to take this garage and make it a home, a temporary home, till he could build one. So he found this, he reconstructed it for his family to live in and asked them to join them. So it was his wife, my great grandmother, and their children, which they had four, to include my grandmother. And they never ever did build the home because the war started. So they lived in this garage as a house for their entire life. And we as great-grandchildren would able to go and visit them in this house.
Cool.
In this house, he carved out little caves and carved little bears that you could play with in the cave. he carved out the Last Supper on one of the beams above the window. He also had a pond, and he carved out a life-size, if you can figure out a life-size statue, of a mermaid. Anyway, and my great-grandmother was a stay-home mother, raised her children, volunteered during the war, helped with the war effort, and her name was Nana, and her husband was Granddaddy.
So you mentioned Nana and Granddaddy, and you mentioned Sookie. What other nicknames did you have for your grandparents?
I think really those were the only two real nicknames that we had. Something I'd like to throw in there was we live on our street. Everybody lived really, really close. I guess that was back in the day of the nuclear family where everybody was kind of in close. And one of my favorite memories about Grandma and Grandpa Hudgens, who lived right down the street, was in the fall they would always slaughter pigs. And so we'd always go down and help, you know, cook cracklings and those kind of things, make lye soap and stuff like that, that I guess that they'd been doing for years. And of course, at the time when we were doing it, it was kind of like, I can't believe that we're still doing this in this day and time. But they're the last people that I know that made lye soap. I'm sure it's happening somewhere else in the world, but in my mind, they were the last ones that ever made lye soap. So that was just a good memory.
And do you have any other nicknames for great-grandparents or great-grandparents?
Yeah. My older brother couldn't say grandma or grandpa, and so he nicknamed my grandmother Dita, and our grandfather was Papa. Now, my cousins, Connie's daughters, called the same couple Bobby and Papa. So, go figure.
And then, what about your parents? What do their grandkids call them?
For Dad, it was Grandpa. And Mother wanted to be called Grandmother because she felt like she was the grandest mother of them all.
Okay.
My mom was called Nan Nan because Mr. Interviewer here was the first grandchild that basically got to know her. And he couldn't say grandma. For whatever reason, he picked Nan Nan for Nana or something. So she's Nan Nan. And my stepfather, Howard, which ultimately ended up being my dad, he was not going to be called Grandpa or Papa or Pawpa or anything like that. It was going to be Granddad. So he ended up being Granddad.
And you both are grandparents yourselves, so Dad, what do your grandchildren call you?
Call me Poppy.
And Mom, what do they call you?
I am Dee Dee.
All right. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life?
Well, there's one that Mom and I share, and I'll probably let her talk about that. She could probably voice it better than I can. Probably the other roughest time in my life would be, the second worst part, rough time would be after my divorce, or going through that process of divorce. And that was a pretty low period for me. I had a job where a very responsible position. Was in the Air Force, so you're supposed to take care of your bills and that kind of thing. I was left with two kids and, of course, a babysitter. My wife had left, and I was supposed to be responsible for all of the remaining bills. She pretty much left everything to me. So I would think that if there was a difficult time, that probably would have been the second worst time in my life. But, hey, survived it. Met a fantastic woman and got married. Still in today, 31 years later, almost 30, going on 32. Sweet.
Well, I'll start with number two. And that would be my divorce, because you ultimately get married with the hope and dreams that you stay with that person and have the ultimate American dream of the White House, the picket fence, the, you know, husband, the wife, two kids, dogs, whatever.
American dream.
Yeah. And it didn't work out that way. And so I'm just going to leave that at that right now. But the worst and most difficult moment in my life is the loss of my son, Joshua. And that's the most difficult moment.
How many kids do you have, Dad?
Actually, I have four. Well, I have two. Well, I have four. Destiny and Shannon are from my previous marriage. And then when I met your mom, of course, you and Josh made four. Mm-hmm. But we raised all of you the same. Mm-hmm. And we loved you all the same. And we tried to be as even across the board as we possibly could be. So I have four kids.
Can you tell me about one or two people that have been the biggest influences in your lives, and not each other?
Okay. I would say the first one you're going to make me cry is my mom.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. For her to selflessly take care of my brother and I, and her go without. Thank you. Box Kleenex here. Thank you. Take care of us, feed us, clothe us, everything, and not ever get anything for herself. And as kids, you just take everything for granted, and you don't realize what she's doing for you at that point in time until later, until you have children and you're in the same lane as she was in, and then you are the one selflessly giving and going without and that kind of thing. I don't know if it's payback or if it's just karma. But, so my mother, she was my rock. She was my everything. She was my one constant. And I'm going to have to think about the other one, so I'll let you do yours.
Well, I'm going to say my mom and dad, and I'm going to include them together because, by and large, they were hardworking people. They did what was right. We grew up in an era that if your kids down the street were doing something wrong, then whatever parent was close, they're the one that swatted them across the ass.
Yeah.
Can I say that here? I guess I did.
So
we grew up during a period of time where neighborhoods were everything, and doing the right thing was the only way to do it. Probably the second person that had the most influence over my life would be a gentleman by the name of Captain at the time, Captain and then later on Major Geiger. I went to headquarters SAC, probably just a young kid, didn't know all that much. He really had a business acumen, really taught me a lot about like the internal operations of what was going on at the Air Force, about business and a lot about life. So I would have to give him some due credit.
I know I'm not supposed to pick Dad, but honest to God, he has been my rock. He has taught me so many things about myself that I didn't like, that I've changed and become a much better person. My brother and I used to fight ferociously all the time, and verbally I would try to hurt him as much as I could because I couldn't hit him to make a dent like he could with me. So I would, kind of like you and your brother, you know, Josh would hit, you had words. So I got really good at hurting with words, and I carried that into this marriage in the beginning and realized at some point a light went on. And I realized that why would I want to hurt and damage and cut as deep as I could, like I did with my brother, the one person in this world that I love the most. And that woke me up. And I've tried ever since to really think before I speak, to really especially think before I speak when we're in an argument. I can't really say we have arguments, but we do have nice discussions now that we're able to sit and say, okay, what about this? And you have to sit there and think to yourself, okay, I really did do that. There's been other things that he has done for me. Work ethic, not that I have a bad one, it's just improved. Personal, just me being a person. He's my hero.
Too kind.
So, yeah, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Oh, my.
I would say the first thing is, if I was still a teenager, whatever relationship you're in now is not going to be forever. So often when we start out and first loves and that kind of thing, and they really hurt when they break up, but they're going to happen. It seldom does it work out when your first love is going to be there forever, but you think it's going to work out. The second thing that I would tell myself is to invest early. Compounding of money is an amazing thing. You don't have to start out rich to be rich when you get older. I mean, investing just a pittance today, a dollar or two when you're a teenager, if you continue to do that your entire life, then by the time it comes time to retire, you'll have the money to retire on. Something you don't understand when you're busy trying to raise a family and scraping and scratching, trying to just to pay the electric bill, but it's something that I would tell my teenage self. Yeah, invest early.
I would tell my teenage self, just keep doing what you're doing, because along the line that I followed, it led to my happiness. So I think as a teenager, I was on the straight and narrow, graduated with honors from high school, joined the military, And that was, I mean, that was a road, an interesting road, and I don't regret that in the least. I had my children, don't regret that at all, and I found the man that I married. I think I would look at her and say, don't be so quick to want to fall in love for the sake of being in love, because it will come.
Yeah, probably the final thing that I would say, I had a teacher, his name was Mr. Sanders, and his advice to me at the time was, whatever you're doing, do it the very best you possibly can, because by the time you're done, it'll be very obvious to you what you should do next. Not to think, just, you know, what a lot of folks have grandiose ideas, and they think so far in the future that they can't function day to day to try to put their lives together. And that's the point he was trying to get across. And work ethic is everything. Do the very best you possibly can do with what you're doing now, because what you'll do in the future, it'll be obvious by the time you get there.
That's good advice. Of the people you've lost in your life, who do you miss the most, and what is it about them that you miss?
I think everybody misses their mom. Our relationship was a little strained by the end, and part of that was because I'd left and went in the Air Force and had been gone for 20 years. But yeah, I think everybody misses their mom. There's just no doubt about it. I miss my son, Joshua, and what I miss about him was his laughter and his good, caring nature. I actually miss where I'm kind of estranged from my other son, Shannon. And for whatever reason, we can't seem to make that work. But I miss him too. So I had a lot of good friends through the years, and several of them have passed on. So the only thing that I can tell you is to really, and I know everybody says this, but enjoy the moment. It will never be the same. Enjoy it right now, because a lot of those relationships or those clicks or those good times that you're having now, once life happens, things change and they're just never the same again. So if you're having a great time, enjoy it.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with you. I miss my mom terribly. We were very, very good friends. She drove me crazy sometimes, but every mother does. But I have to say my son. Joshua, I miss his big bear hugs. I miss him barreling through the front door. I mean, he did nothing calmly. It was full speed ahead with him, and his laughter and his sense of humor. And I miss being around all my children. I miss my kids being close by. They're so spread out. But I think I miss Josh the most because I can't get my hands on him and I can't call him. So.
Can you tell me one of your happiest memories?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about hopefully your engagement and wedding. So.
I probably can't use those two. then probably what I would do would be I would go back to the 25th of May. It's the 15th of May, wasn't it?
It was the 25th of April.
Well, thank you for all that. The 25th of April. But I remember the moment because it was at Thirsty's Bar was when I first met your mom. So that was an evening that was fairly remarkable. I mean, there wasn't anything X-rated about it. It was just two people that needed each other desperately and intellectually and that kind of thing. We just clicked and we shared a whole lot in common.
One of my happiest memories was holding you for the first time, feeling you move around inside me and realizing I was creating a life. I wondered what you looked like, you know, who you were going to grow up to be, and your brother, having my babies, and of course, meeting you and falling in love with you.
Now, talk about births and that kind of thing, are probably one of the scariest parts of my life was when Destiny was born. It's one of those where you realize that suddenly you have someone else in the world that you have to care for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was, I sat in the car waiting for it to warm up after an ice storm had went through the 1st and 2nd of January when she was born. And I went outside and there was over an inch of ice on the windshield. And I was sitting there waiting for the car to defrost, thinking about what responsibilities I really had now. So that was an eye-opening moment.
Can you tell me about how you two became engaged to each other and how you got married?
Oh my, well, it was pretty quick. That was a pig toy from one of the dogs, not us. I had gone with my friend from work to pick up her husband at a bar in Omaha, Nebraska. That's where we live. And when we got there, her husband was three sheets to the wind, drunk. And anyway, Dad walked in, and long story short, we all went to this particular bar called Caddy's, and we danced and had a good time with all of his friends because I didn't know them. And, you know, we met, like you said, on the 25th of April, and I believe it was June. I actually don't remember when he proposed to me, what month it was. June or July? When did you go to Michigan?
It's right after Juan got back, so I think it was in July.
You talk about the proposal.
I'm not so sure that there ever really was a proposal. I know that I had asked you to marry me, and you said no. And the reason was because you had two kids to think about. So it took a couple of repeated times to actually get your mom to say
yes. He actually did call my mom and dad.
So, you know, that was the thing to do. But probably that's a little old-fashioned as well, but you got to ask the dad and the mom if you can marry her daughter. So I actually called and talked to them. Of course, they were having never met me, just talking to mom over the phone and that kind of thing. They were all about it. So that worked out great.
The criteria was just make her happy, take care of her, and he's done a fantastic job of that. So what was the other question you had?
What was it? And then how you got married.
How we got married? Well, Greg got orders from Omaha to go to Hickam Air Force Base in Honolulu, Hawaii, and we followed over after they got there, he and Shannon and Destiny. And we planned a wedding over on the other side of the island at a place called Waimea Falls. And we decided we were going to get married on Christmas Day, 1986, at noontime. And it was an outside wedding. And the night before, it rained and rained and rained. And so the next day we woke up, not a cloud in the sky, and we drove across the island to Waimea Falls, and we were in the ginger garden, and the kids were all dressed. The boys were all in the same shirt patterns, and Destiny had her own little dress, and Dad and I got married, and you kids were fighting off ants. And Dad and I never had an aunt on us. That was the crazy thing. And that's how we got married.
Great. So keeping in mind that your great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren could end up listening to this someday, what piece of timeless advice do you have for them? And what kind of words do you have about what it means to be in our family?
Ooh, that's a big responsibility right there. I think the most important thing is take care of your family. Love deeply and always take care of them, because those are the people that you're going to be able to count on, I hope. I hope you stay close to them. And I hope they're good to each other and love each other. because it's a big world and there's a lot of ugly and mean people out there. And I would hope that you can turn to your siblings, turn to your parents, your grandparents, your cousins, and know that they've got your back, which means you can count on them.
Unfortunately, when you're young, you kind of treat your family worse than you do your friends. And I think what you find out through the ages is your family's always going to be there for you. So the quicker you learn that lesson, the better off you're going to be. Take care of one another. Love one another. And I really mean love one another. It's more than just saying it. It's actually going through the motions and accepting each other and understanding each other's limitations as well as their potential. Just love one another.
Everyone is different. You have to keep that in mind. No one is cut from the same cookie cutter. And you never know when the phone might ring and you might get the call that says, person X, we've lost. You never know how long you have with your family, your friends. So treat them good and love them.
So you both have mentioned the word love several times just now and in the last couple minutes. Why don't you tell me what love is?
Love is throwing yourself wide open and being vulnerable to each other and accepting of each other and understanding that the other person is there and they have your back and you've got theirs. So I guess that's my definition of love.
I think mine is respecting one another. I think that you can love someone with all your heart and soul, but if the respect is gone, then you don't tender that relationship. You don't kindle the flame. You just can walk away from it or walk all over it. And I think with respect, you're careful in the words you choose. You're careful in how you treat that person. And I think that between the respect, the consideration, and the compassion that you show, and like you said, you go into it wide open. And unless something happens to break that spell, then I think that's love.
Thank you both for doing this tonight.